Lexi Davidson, Mid Ulster Branch Association. Conference: a safe, secure and affordable home is something all families deserve, yet for too many in Northern Ireland, this is something that is not available. Evidence of the need for social housing in Northern Ireland comes from two main sources. Local housing needs assessment using the common waiting list for social housing and the net stock model developed in partnership with the University of Ulster in 1994 and updated on a regular basis since. The most recent version of the net stock model points to the need for 1,200 new homes to be built each year. However, because there were several years since 2001 where the target was not achieved, it is considered appropriate that an additional 800 are provided each year to make up the shortfall of previous years. At March 2013, there were 41,356 applicants registered on the social housing waiting list, with 22,414 deemed to be in housing stress. They have found themselves with no alternative but to rent from private landlords who are charging exorbitant monthly fees, thus leaving them in extreme poverty. Paying their rent and keeping a roof over their family's head is the number one priority for all parents. But due to the high monthly rental fees being charged by these private landlords, members of our communities are then left asking themselves a question they should never have to ask. Can we afford to eat or heat our home this week? The stress this causes should not be underestimated, and it is compounded by the fact that so many are living in homes that could be sold at any time, giving them very little, if any, notice. And due to the lack of social housing, we have young families having to move away from their network of friends and families into unfamiliar areas with no support network. These families are left feeling isolated and in some cases suffering from extreme depression. Our people don't want handouts or something for nothing. All they ask is they have an affordable home for them and their families that cannot be pulled from underneath them. Conference, the Northern Ireland Executive have failed in their duty to deliver the social housing that is required to meet the needs of our communities. Conference calls on the Northern Ireland Executive to prioritise funding enabling building to commence that would redress the shortage of affordable social housing in working class areas of Northern Ireland. Thank you, Conference.
By Robert Black. Robert, if you want to add anything to it?
No.
Okay. Anyone else like to speak on?
Sorry, thank you. Ian Elliott, South Belfast Branch. It's just to add a wee caveat to that bit about social housing. It's that if it's affordable social housing. I come from the village area of South Belfast and was involved in campaigning for the redevelopment of the village. We finally got it to happen. Half of the housing we actually needed, leaving quite a large area of the village now effectively a waste ground. But I now find my position as a working man, I can't afford the new houses. The new houses are, it's all, the housing sector is basically being done away with. I don't know when it's going to be collapsed, but it's going to be housing associations taking over social housing. The new houses for a three bedroom house is £400 a month plus to be able to rent them, which is fine if you're on a dole. I said, I'm a working man, I do need one of the houses, I can't afford it, so I can't pay for one of them. However, if you do go into those, if you're on the door and you do go into those houses, in the short term, might be fine, the door will pay for it. You might find a position where you can't actually go on and find work anymore because you'll be having to pay huge exorbitant amounts of rent, so you'll be stuck in a poverty trap. As I said, you know, there's a lot of people out there that actually think that the structure of the housing is such a good thing. I'm not one of those people that think we're getting rid of a monster of one head and leaving the monsters of many heads. The same people that run the housing exec and we're running the housing associations. This would be more often. And we're now in a final position where we have less social housing. It's not going to be any real government control over the social housing, and the social housing is providing, it's going to be far too expensive for anybody working to afford and for a decent wage.
Okay. Thank you, Ian. Anyone else
who
can comment on that?
No.
Okay, if not, then I'll just have an email ask for a show of hands to support the motion. Ian, that's possibly unanimous. So that again will be enshrined in public policy. We now come to the fifth motion of the day. Yes, slightly out of the tenet here, but I'm going to call upon, this is a motion put forward by William Mulvaney, seconded by William McQuaid, both in the North Belfast branch, and it's on the military covenant. So I'll ask William Mulvaney to come up and speak on it. Thank you.
Chairman, officers and conference, ladies and gentlemen all, my name is Billy Mulvaney and I'm a member of the North Belfast branch of the Progressive Unionist Party, and I work as part of a team who is seeking the full implementation of the Armed Forces Covenant by the Legislative Assembly here in Northern Ireland. May I firstly give conference a brief explanation before moving that motion to give you an insight from our perspective into the Armed Forces Covenant. The Covenant is something I'm sure you have all heard of, but like so many of us, have not seen or even realised the very poor, and in our case here in Northern Ireland, virtually non-existent implementation of the government's promise to the armed forces community. And I take this chance, if I may, with the Chairman to welcome to conference this afternoon Ranger Andy Allen and his team. Andy is the personification, in my opinion, of why this Armed Forces Covenant in full must be implemented here in Northern Ireland, the same as the United Kingdom. Ranger Andy Allen, who I've got to know reasonably well, particularly over this past year since embarking on this as part of our branch, would simply tell you that he was doing his duty, and that always happens to somebody, and there's always things worse off than what he is, and there are people who demand and need things far more. That, of course, as you can see by Andy, who was horrifically injured in the line of duty while serving his country in Afghanistan, is simply not the case. He deserves and has the respect of this party, I'm sure. As I look around conference, I know, because many of them are my personal friends, many here will have served in the armed forces, and in our opinion, what was felt happened to you when you left in the past was simply that you felt alone. You felt as though you were no longer wanted, because in the armed forces, you were part of that family group. When you left it and came home to your only own family group, that is the only group you had. You lost the security of the family. You even, in some cases, felt deserted and abandoned by the country who you had chosen to serve. And this is what, amongst the numerous other factors, not least the social and economical ones, but certainly in particular the growing numbers of the repatriated dead, the wounded, both physically and psychologically, and of course the bereaved, is what brought, arguably, if not forced, the government to initiate and publish in May 2011 a white paper that was to become known as the Armed Forces Covenant. Hereafter, if I may, refer to it as the Covenant. The government defined the Covenant as follows, that it sets out a relationship between the nation, the state and the armed forces. It recognises the whole nation has a moral obligation to members of the armed forces and their families, and it establishes how they should be expect to be treated. Therefore, it really exists to redress the disadvantages that the armed forces community face in comparison with other citizens, and to recognise the sacrifices made. In some cases, this will require special consideration, especially to those who have given the most, such as the injured and the bereaved. To go with that definition, the government drew up some principles, and they were the guiding principles of the covenant, that the armed forces community should not face disadvantage because of its military experience. And then as said, in some cases, giving special consideration to enable access to public or commercial services that civilians wouldn't normally receive. The covenant covers a whole spectrum of social, economic and personal issues, from welfare to benefits to housing to education, and then to full-time and ongoing support after service that is vital to those who are injured, both physically and, one person I know in this room, mentally, through having post-traumatic stress disorder, and he also deserves that same recognition. So therefore, in the government's guidelines, it is crucial that government and the nation recognise the unique and immense sacrifices the armed forces community makes. I move then, if I may, to the party position on the covenant, as defined in the principle number one of the principles of loyalism, commencing with being convinced in our consciences, and then in particular the social and economic well-being of the people of Northern Ireland. And to that end, we believe that the party position on the covenant should be both unambiguous and unequivocal, in so much as the Progressive Unionist Party position on this should be clear, in that the Northern Ireland Executive must recognise the Armed Forces Covenant, agree the principles of the covenant, instalment immediately in line with the rest of the United Kingdom, and this being regardless of the pan-nationalist anti-British stance and their misuse and their abuse of the Section 75 as a blocking tactic. We pledge to continue our campaign for the implementation of the Armed Forces Covenant here in Northern Ireland as equal citizens of this United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and interestingly, as scheduled in Article 14 of the Human Rights Act, the prohibition of discrimination. This party believe absolutely that those who have served, are serving, and will serve in the future deserve the unswerving respect and gratitude of the country whom they chose to fight, protect, and in some cases die for, in order for us all to live the lives that we have chosen to live. May I give a few examples of background comparisons that may be helpful to show those comparisons across the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Across the rest of the United Kingdom, county, city and borough councils who have implemented the covenant either partially or completely are increasing on an almost daily basis. Compare this with the implementation of the covenant in Northern Ireland, and the most effective method I have to explain this, I believe, would be to give some sample extracts of questions raised from the Northern Ireland Affairs Committee report 2013-2014. What output has there been from the Northern Ireland Assembly? In a word, none, nothing, zilch, squat, etc., etc. Albeit, it is only fair to say that the Democratic Unionist Party, the Ulster Unionist Party and the Alliance parties have all issued statements calling for this to happen. But that's where it's ended. And furthermore, in the Unionist-controlled councils of North Down, Larne and Castlereagh, they have passed motions calling for the full implementation and have appointed advocates to the Community Covenant. And this is a local-level scheme spawning out of the Covenant to assist the armed forces community. Although these moves are laudable, the advocates appointed to date are simply given another portfolio. And we here need a portfolio of our own. The veterans in Northern Ireland are badly disadvantaged compared with those in the rest of the United Kingdom, and particularly those from other devolved governments. You have heard today that we are looking for equality within the Progressive Unionist Party. We are looking for party of esteem. We are looking for equality in all that we do for everybody, not just for us. When we know that whilst the Scottish and Welsh administrations have made statements and given their support, financially and practically, nothing of any significance has happened here in Northern Ireland. And to underpin this, may I read a short extract from the Armed Forces Covenant 2012. In contrast to Scotland and Wales, it has not been possible to make the same progress in building support for and delivering the Armed Forces Covenant from within the Northern Ireland Executive. And why is this? They say the suggestion that the Covenant could provide preferential access to cross-government services for serving and former members of the armed forces could be seen as running counter to their strict equality legislation. However, they do go on to say that we will continue to make the case for the Northern Ireland Executive to adopt the principles of the Armed Forces Covenant where it is possible to do so. For this year's annual report, they say, the views of the Northern Ireland Executive have been sought, but have not been obtained. Therefore, we would contend that the Armed Forces Covenant de facto does not exist within Northern Ireland, and this is due to the misuse and abuse of Section 75 of the Northern Ireland Act 1998 that, as you will know, placed a statutory obligation on public authorities in carrying out their various functions relating to Northern Ireland to have due regard to the need to promote equality of opportunity. And the real barrier to all this conference is the Republican movement, willingly assisted by the wider pan-nationalist front, who block all and every attempt at the Northern Ireland Assembly. As I understand it, a community vote is required, arising from Sinn Féin petitions of concern, to evoke the Armed Forces Covenant in full or indeed even partially. And they use Section 75 as their validation for this divisive action. This abuse is strategically used by those in Sinn Féin and the wider pan-nationalist front, who are the overt opposition of our armed forces both at home and abroad. In the same way, as the party leader pointed out, they are the overt opposition of all things British, the de-Britishification of Northern Ireland. And this, quite simply, as you know, will not happen. Within England and Wales and Scotland, local governments have actively funded various schemes to support serving personnel, veterans and their families, but nothing, absolutely nothing, like this happens here at home in Northern Ireland. This sums up, in my view, the selective commitment we have in Northern Ireland from our devolved assembly, or at least from many within it. Some quick statistics, if I may, to put that into context. The population of Northern Ireland, as you know, is approximately 1.8 million people, of which some 300,000 belong to the armed forces' wider community. A substantial section of that community, as by anyone's understanding. Government statistics record there are some 3,754 war disablement pensions, 665 war widow or widower's pensions being claimed at this time, plus some 70 armed forces compensation payouts. And as well as this, combat stress, who care for the need of the psychologically injured, are currently providing treatment for some 776 veterans throughout Ireland. And they, interestingly, cover both the Republic of Ireland and here in Northern Ireland. Our actions to date and our future intentions are as follows. The party working group met with Mike Penning, Minister of State in the Northern Ireland office in February of this year, when we explained the position as we, as representatives of the party, see it. And to be fair to him, he was attentive and interested. But of course, he would be, wouldn't he? because he was the Prime Minister's liaison on this very topic in Northern Ireland. And further meetings are being arranged with him through the party leader, though this will likely be his successor due to the recent reshuffle. Individuals from without this branch, and I'm sure beyond, are actively advising and assisting veterans, families and dependents with claims, benefits, housing and other needs. We will be organising information sessions for our veterans, their families and their dependents, and it is the intention, our intention, to continue to lobby anyone who will listen and who will benefit to ensure the full implementation of the Covenant. In conclusion, to this background, may I ask that we in the Progressive Unionist Party will at least say the Northern Ireland Executive must recognise the Armed Forces Covenant, agree the principles and implement the Covenant in Stormont, and this being regardless of that Republican and pan-nationalist anti-British stance and their using of Section 75 as their blocking mantra. Chairman, party leaders, conference all, that concludes this very short presentation that only allowed me to touch ever so briefly on the parts that we consider today to be the most informant and most relevant to conference. There is much more to be said. There are many more statistics. There are many case studies. There are many horror stories still to be told that would leave you, like me, both frustrated and angry. But at this time, suffice to say that as a working group, and more importantly, as a party, that we will not rest until we have fairness and equality shown by our devolved government to the armed forces community, who have already given and will continue to give so much. In conclusion, Chairman, I respectively move that conference support this motion, calling on the Northern Ireland Assembly to fully implement the Armed Forces Covenant. I so move.
To support our servicemen and to support the sacrifice that they have made is really a sad indictment of our political institutions. And I think this would be a great time to send out a message, not just that we support the Armed Forces Covenant, but also that the unionist politicians who sit in government, who have failed to implement this, and failed to point out why this has not been implemented, should hang their heads in shame. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Johnny. Anyone else? No? Okay, well, I think it's I'm going to ask for the show of hands anyway, but I think it's probably unnecessary, but I'll ask for a show of hands from the delegates in support of this motion, please. Thank you very much. That is obviously unanimously passed, and nobody, mainly the guests from the Stantonists, of course, we all agree with, but also from Billy's and Pasha's delivery of the motion. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Chair.
We're kind of, it's something we don't normally do, but we have done this year. We have provided another tea break, which we're actually dying on time, almost for 3 o'clock. What I will ask you to do is, if we're 15 minutes this time, please make it 15 minutes. And again, there's another motion to come, and then a report from our electoral officer, Davey Mack. So I ask you to please do return. Some people tend to drop off. Please come back the last hour or so, or maybe not even an hour of the proceedings. But we'll have another cup of tea now.